Are you doing okay?
We're coming round. We're here for the show. I'll be happy tomorrow.
Hi, this is Christy and Katrina here at the DK805 podcast. We're here today to discuss a variety of things, but one of them that I'll be touching on today is how to be resilient in the face of adversity. I woke up today with a heavy, heavy heart, knowing that today I'll be walking into the courthouse addressing just the pain of the reality of where my life is right now. A lot of times I compartmentalize things, and I don't like to deal with the realness of Devin's death. It's just too painful.
Yeah.
And I'm only 15 months into it, and I do a lot of avoidance, which isn't healthy. I've been trying to do a lot more reading and research on grief by itself and how to handle grief. And one of the things I recently read this past week is to be careful about the person that seems like they're overly functioning very well,
right?
Which hit me like a brick on the head. Because I'm that person.
That's just was looking over a post that I had made the other day for it was Robin Williams, and it was like, depression has that, you know, be careful the person that's always smiling and laughing, because it's you know, just in terms of not sharing. And my Dylan was always doing that, was just kind of, there was a lot of avoidance
of the reality.
Yeah.
So today when I was out getting ready to meet with you today, I stopped by knowing I had to go into court today, and I wanted to bring my own lunch. Mm-hmm. And so I was in the parking lot, and as I was walking into Sprouts, I was in my own head thinking about the court, and I noticed a bumper sticker that said, "Not One More," mm-hmm. which is the group that I originally got involved with when Devin was in his early illness. And I've spoken, and I used to go talk to the youth at risk at the Ventura County Division for the Youth.
Right.
And Devin was in that program as well, but I had the opportunity to go talk to them. And one of the things I used to always stand up and say to them is, the most important relationship that we can have is the one with ourselves. And so every time I would see the youth there, I would encourage them. And that was when I was still in the very, very hopeful stages that Devin would beat his own illness.
Yeah.
And at that time, I felt it necessary. I deal with stress strange, but my strangeness is I immerse myself in the things that hurt me because I need to learn how to cope.
You've been doing the activist type things and speaking out for so many years. Just what you shared with how long ago that first, you know, interview that you did with Hard Copy was, anti-drug, which was like so early before there was any thought that that could have been even in your path. And
yeah, what was interesting about that is that that was in 1997. So if you go on to the podcast, we do have that video up on our website, which is the DK805podcast.com. If you go watch that video, that was done in 1997. Devin was 2 years old.
Yeah.
And I worked with the local police department at that time. And one of the DE agents there, he pulled me aside and he said, "You need to be very careful with what's coming in the future." He said, "Watch your children carefully because you have no idea what's on the horizon." I thought he was crazy. I actually went home and I kind of laughed because I had this beautiful, healthy 2-year-old little boy. I had a 5-year-old And I also had my stepson who was 8 at the time. So I had these cute little children running around, and I could not see it coming. But everything he told me was so accurate. So now when I go back and I watch that post, and it was an actual interview. When I watch it, I look at how the marketing of the candy was set up to sell in drug vials to children, and how the person selling the candy said I was uptight, self-righteous, and morally constipated. And when I see those things, now I fume. I get so angry that I was...
Because something far worse has come, hasn't it?
It's called an epidemic.
Yeah,
and we're losing a whole generation of children.
Yeah.
A whole generation. And I look at that, and how did that even start, that we thought it'd be okay to sell candy to kids by the name of Cloud Nine? And what was the other one? Cloud Nine, and it was in a vial, a drug vial.
Yeah, change. We've got it. We, you know, that's the standing up for, you know, having the resilience to stand up for what we know we need to do. And by honoring our sons in our walk, and so many other people that are in this fight, you know, we walk with them. We walk for the future generations. We just have to keep, you know, we have to keep going, and, you know, and not giving up.
Well, and the change in me from 1997 to where I was an innocent young mom to a mom who's now fully entrenched in a court. It's in the courts.
Right.
Watching another individual being charged with the connection to my son's death is so, so overwhelming. And I look at that and the awareness that's become in my mind has changed from A to Z. One, I never thought that it would ever be part of my life. I know in a previous episode I've never broken the law, which, let me correct that, I'm not that pious. I most certainly have gotten speeding tickets and other, but I've never been involved in the drug world in any form. That just was not my interest.
Yeah.
And quite honestly, I don't know if it was even my children's interest or if they fell into it. I know with Devin, it was almost as if he was sought out and he was bullied. And from the bullying and wanting acceptance, one of the things I would tell Devin all the time is, in the drug world, everybody will accept you. They'll accept you right on in because it's another person to party with, another sale. But what happens when you enter that drug world, all your other friends tend to pull away.
That's right. And without connection, that's the, you know, where we were talking about, you know, the opposite of, you know, addiction, connection, and having that be where even now where we're healing and trying to help others in our recovery of grief. Is the connection that we just want to have people feel that they aren't alone walking in this, because it is, you know, how we're handling it, we, you know, are dealing with it. I just hope that we can be encouraging other people to have it be, to turn to the light, to stay in the walk, again, if God forbid that, as you shared, you just said you were walking and you told me the story earlier that you were talking to you asked the person that had the car with the bumper sticker, "Not one more," and you asked, "Who did you lose?" And it just hit me, because those are the people that I look at now when I see someone else in the rooms that I go to for my help, for my my encouragement to get through. I want to help other people, and it's like when I look at you with all that you have on your plate today to go to court. And that you still took the time to ask this person who she lost, and you held space for her, and she lost two people. It's just, we're in such a polarized time where it feels really like it's, you know, people want to have it be, we don't want to allow it to be where it's uncomfortable to ask people how they're doing and hold space for them, and, you know, just worrying about what we say and the language we use. I just think we just are learning a lot as we're going along, and that's what this is about. We're all just learning about all of this. No one asked for any of this to happen.
Absolutely not. And one of the things I've had to learn through my journey is reaching into my tool belt and outsourcing my pain. And when I mean outsourcing it, it's I have to reach out for the lifelines because I haven't always known where they are.
Yeah.
And that is how our connection started, was with I saw your response, and we've developed a podcast so we can reach so many people, because as you said, we are so polarized. Our society is so polarized right now. But what we need more than anything in order to come together, I feel what the United States needs is comfort, compassion, and connection.
Right.
And we are at a time where it's pivotal. Either we can turn away or we can lean into our pain. And one of the things that I know I've had to deal with myself throughout Devin's addiction, I would constantly be saying, I need help. I need help. Somebody help me, please.
Right.
And I was often told I was over the top. It's a normal phase of child development, but I saw my child getting sicker and sicker and sicker.
Same.
And I started to, not until actually recently, even after Devin passed away, I was only in survival mode trying to get Devin treatment and help and anything.
That's the mode.
And survive myself. And I've just recently, in my healing, I don't even know if I'm healing. I'm 15 months in. I'm just, I compare it to taking baby steps and breathing through it. Mm. I know, like when I woke up today, I did have that heavy heart because I know I will be going into court today, and I will be facing, I can't ignore it. I'm facing the realness of my life. And in that, when I walked through the courthouse, I think I mentioned on one of previous episode, last time I was had my head in my hands and I looked up and I recognized the name of a treatment center on an individual shirt. And I looked at the person next to him and I said, how old are you? And there goes my emotions again. He said, I'm 26. I stood up and I said, I'm so glad you're here. I said, do whatever you have to do to get sober. Do whatever you have to do. And the other person from the treatment center is looking at me. And I said, thank you for being here with him.
Yeah.
And if I was going to court, I never went to court before, but I don't even know if I would notice that. So now when I am out in the world, just doing my own business, there's things I can't ignore. I just can't ignore them anymore. Like when I see the kid standing on the corner with a street sign that I know is asking for money, I often, and I do this often actually, will stop and I'll sit down with them and I'll ask them, tell me your story. Wow. How can I help you?
Yeah.
What is it that you need? I remember I said, when was the last time you called your mom?
Yeah, I've done that many times.
And he's like, well, I don't know where my mom is. I said, who can you call? And so I've handed them my phone. I was in Albuquerque when I did this. And it was on Mother's Day. I said, I'm not going to get up until you tell your mom happy Mother's Day. And so I picked up the phone. I could hear the mom crying on the other end. And I did say, he's safe, he's here, I'm going to buy him lunch. So it's not necessarily the need of having to give people money. Sometimes they just need the support.
Yeah.
They just need the love, the outstretched of hands. I don't know whatever happened. That was when Devin was in his illness and Devin was still living. But I would often pray at night that people would extend kindness to Devin, because I've seen the opposite.
Yeah, we've talked about that, how it is that it's, and that's what we are, again, with the conversations we're having, and hoping that this can be where people can just hear that it you just never know what someone's carrying around with them in their heart, their brokenness, their trauma, their pain, and the assumption or the stigmas that we can do. We can obviously we have to keep there's a level you know, we've talked about this that I did a lot of that also what you shared that you know I saw the young it always resonated to the, you know the age and maybe just the lost looking feeling person and it would be I'm just going to say for me it felt like okay if I do this same thing that someone will do you know would do that but also for myself I felt that it would be like this some like way of saving my son and I did it also just as I started you know doing that becoming more aware of just the conversation just is that what the person is missing or the feeling of someone there for them but you know as we know with addiction and the disease of that oftentimes it is just that you know they need to do the work they need to seek the help and you know that's a mother's love to want to sit there and talk to them but they need to do the work because there is the mother at home that's just really really
well and sometimes
worried.
Sometimes somebody out in society can hear it better from somebody and that's why the rooms of recovery is where I learned how to help my son the best and one of the activities I did when my kids were young, it was in a mommy and me class. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I was, an exercise that I remember the most is writing all the traits mm-hmm. you wanted your children to grow up with.
Right.
And it was if you wanted them to be happy, if you wanted them to be artistic, if you wanted them to be kind. In that activity, I remember the teacher at that time, and Devin was maybe, I don't even know, it might have been Casey, who knows, it might have been my other child, but it was along the lines of, what do you want your child to be when they grow up? Mm. And so we put all these notes on the board, and they said, okay, now go claim that piece of paper and put it on your bathroom mirror. You'll see it every day, and you need to become it. And so in that exercise, when I go into court now, I've written all the things I want my younger children and my other children. How are we going to cope with grief? How are we going to cope with adversity in life? Mm-hmm. And one of the things is I have to be it. I have to be it. I have to be the person that says, life's hard. Mm-hmm. It's hard. And it's nobody's coming to save me. Nobody's coming to save me. And in knowing that, I have to be willing to lean into my pain in spite of how hard it is to walk into that courthouse.
Yeah.
In spite of sitting in my car, holding my breath and crying before I go in, or crying when I come out of the courthouse because it's not fun. It's not fun to go there.
It's awful. I can't even, from my heart, I've told you that, you know, I am unable at this stage in my grief to say that I could go in that courtroom. And I love you so much. And that, for me, has been really painful to process. But I've been processing as we started this to come to understand I have to also, in order to, like, do self-care for myself, I have to kind of protect my heart in certain ways. And I know there's a time when you said there's going to be a time where there'll be a show needing to be a feeling of all of the loss that's happened. And I just know that I will be there. But I just love you so much. I just hold so much space for you. I can't even comprehend the pain that you go through when you walk through those doors.
Well, I remind myself all of the time that it's not just my child. Mm-hmm. It's a community. It's so many people that are being affected. And it's my son. I always say graduated. I know you say transitioned, but I always say graduated from life. There's many others that are still struggling. Mm-hmm. And in that struggle, there is hope.
Yes.
And there is resilience. And resilience is where, that's what I would talk to Devin about.
Yeah.
And so instead, I still talk to Devin. Like before I left the house today, I went over and he's on, I always said I wanted him home and I wanted him safe. Never did I mean, did I want him sitting on my coffee table? That's not safe. He's home.
Dylan's word was infinity. And, you know, and it is, it's at that, that language I use with him constantly. He's infinitely with me. He got one tattoo in his life, one tattoo, and it was, he was in a sober living, and he took me with him, wanted me to go with him. It was his birthday, and we just felt that turning point was there, and we were just like, I'm like, what do you, like, want to do just to sort of just, you know, recognize this day, and, you know, to have your son want you to go with him to, he's like, he's never had one, he's been thinking about it and praying about it a long time, and he did say those things. He did think about things deeply, deeply. And we went with them to get it, and so that I have that beautiful memory. The reason why I just shared that was because in all that I've been feeling so much lately, of that I'm so grateful that I had my son for 28 years. I'm so grateful the memories that I pull on now, that when they're not so, just not the parts that were the hard mess. I want to just remember in how many beautiful memories, like you were just talking about the things, what do you want your child to be? I have a lot of beautiful memories that are just those things. He was creative. He was super beautiful heart, loving, kind. He showed compassion to people. So all those things that I know that we did want him for him, he had. He just had pain, which is addiction, which is unhealed pain.
Absolutely. And one of the things I have learned since Devin's passing, I knew this before because I've lost other members, but for anybody who is listening, other members, I've lost other family members, not to addiction, but to illness. But anybody listening, is that there is something after this life. And I look at that as resilience. Just before Devin's anniversary, date of his first year of his passing, I was not sure what I wanted to do. And it was just 2 days before, I had a beautiful dream of Devin, and he was singing this song called I'm Coming Home. And it's one of his songs, Coming Home. And so it was so real. And I saw him playing his guitar, and in the dream, he looked up. There goes the emotion. He looked at me, and I'm like, Devin? And he's like, Mom, I'm home. I'm home. And in that, I had this epiphany to go out and get a tattoo as well. So I have a tattoo of a guitar on my arm that says coming home, because our loved ones do communicate with us.
They do. The signs.
And we have to look for those things. And that's part of the resilience.
It's part of the healing. It's part of trusting in that.
I don't understand where my beautiful boy, how he's, I gave birth to a healthy little boy, full of life. And then within 28 years, I lost my son to an illness. And in that process, I had to learn how to love my son through his illness. Addiction is the only illness where sometimes you have to run away from your child instead of to your child. And it's the only illness. Everybody gives you all different types of advice on what you need to do. And I am sitting there thinking, I think I haven't tried that. I've tried everything.
Everything.
I would have taken my child's illness from him and shouldered the pain. And that's the most painful part of watching a loved one struggle with illness is, as you stated, recovery is possible. But sometimes their brains get so sick that they can't even think of recovery. They can only think of getting well. Addicts don't use because they want to use. At some point, they use because they don't want to feel sick.
That's been a topic I wanted to bring up, and I know that we'll talk more on it today, being just all these emotions coming, but just how important it is to, you know, again, we're sort of limited, you know, as parents. You know, and people have all their things, they think they have the answer. Like that was how we connected was, you know, if you have the cure, someone was saying, you know, don't ever let him give up on your child. And this is after me seeing this post that I just, you know, had, you never give up on your child, but also too, if you have the answer, you know, the cure, then tell us all, what's the cure? There is not one. And it's a journey. And then so the self-care that we have to give ourselves during I was also just surviving. I was running faster I was trying to rescue and save. So there were the things that people would say, like, you're too worried, or, you know, that is just, those things are hard when I look back at, because I mean, look where I'm at. So this is what I was worried about, because we do know. And I want to talk about how I do believe that there is, with the mental health, because it is, once they are so into it, that addiction part, once that's the trigger for them, once they have that escape feeling, their minds aren't thinking clearly to say, I'm ready to go get, or I'm going to stick with the program. So,
well, and sometimes, you know, there does need to be
like a
an intervention.
Yes.
And the system itself, I believe, needs to support the families.
Yes.
It needs to be affordable.
The same care that would be given into
30 days, right? Is not long enough.
No.
For the reprogramming of the brain.
No.
And in the resilience, it's allowing myself to feel all emotions. I lean into the pain. I lean out of the pain. Mm-hmm. I am a ping pong ball, and moderation is, it's good to be all of it. Mm-hmm. As long as it's not harmful to myself. And that needs, through, one of the things I think that is important for society, and I'm talking everybody, is understanding resilience. There needs to be more resilient classes. There needs to be understanding life's coming for everybody. It's not just me. It's not just you. Everybody's going to have the pain in their life. And whether it's through addictions, whether it's through accidents, whether it's through loss, life is ruthless, and it will knock you to your knees. I think that was in Rocky Balboa, but he was one of my heroes as a kid. So it's learning to get back up.
That's why I see you as a fighter, because I feel like this has just built up to where it has just come up to my I just sort of have this, like, just by watching you, and then everything just came to this last week being such a heavy time for so many people, so many young people, with like feeling maybe just that, like, they're, you know, like, what, just that maybe a hopeless, and having these things in the news being talked about. There is a bigger conversation coming, which I think that, you know, hopefully we're just on this part of it, but we do need to just know that we're part of a community that needs to share, and
because
needs to share our hurts and the good stuff and the bad stuff and the messy stuff, and be there.
And right now that's the fear, right?
Yeah.
And if we remember the fear as being, we need to face everything and rise.
Right.
We need to rise and lean into the struggles in life and reach out to each other with compassion.
That's right. That's right. I think that's what we're...
So I'm glad that we're here today, and I'm glad that we can talk about the difficulty. And when we talk about the courts, I need to be able to talk about it freely, and I want to share my experiences, because I know I'm not the only parent going to court, whether it's your child is the one that is incarcerated, or whether it's the one that is, you're going through it for yourself or your child. But again, we need people to reach out to us, because it is a community issue. So please reach out to us at dk805podcast.com. And again, this is Christy at Katrina. And I'll repeat it one more time, dk805podcast. Podcast. Thank you for tuning in and listening to us today.
We're coming round. We're here for the show. I'll be happy.